Okay, so get this, listeners. Today we're taking a deep dive into the world of prophets in the Old Testament. You sent us some pretty interesting sources about all the different Hebrew terms they used for these guys. And, well, I guess our mission today is to figure out what made Israelite prophecy stand out and maybe even uncover what it all means for us today, you know?
Yeah, it's a real journey, a journey full of twists and turns. I mean, you might think you know what a prophet is, right? But the ancient world, ooh, it had some surprises, some real surprises.
Yeah, for sure. Like, for starters, we got these terms, right? Nabi and Ro, often translated as prophet and seer. A lot of people, well, I think a lot of people assume those were totally different roles.
Right.
Like, were the Ro, like, using crystal balls or something?
That's a pretty common misconception, actually. The biblical text kind of pushes back on that idea. Think about Samuel. He's called a roe, but he gets God's message directly. No fancy rituals or anything.
Huh. So maybe it wasn't all, as rigid as we thought. But what about the Urim and Thummim? The high priest used those things to figure out God's will, right? And that seems pretty seer-like to me.
Yeah, you've hit on a crucial point there. The people who used those, the Urim and Thummim, they were priests, fulfilling a role tied to the temple. And it's interesting, they were never actually called Ro. The text seems to draw a line, between those who rely on those external methods and those who receive God's message through direct inspiration.
Okay, so the lines are getting a little blurry. It sounds like Nabi and Ro, maybe they were more like two sides of the same coin, both pointing to the core function, right? Receiving and sharing God's message. But then we have Hosea too, which also means seer. So was that just another term, just kind of thrown into the mix?
Not quite. It's true that Hosea shares that seer element with Ro, but it emphasizes the visual aspect of receiving that revelation from God. It's all about seeing the message, often through visions or dreams.
Ah, like Isaiah's famous vision in Isaiah chapter 1. He describes seeing the Lord high and lifted up.
Exactly.
Pretty powerful imagery.
It really is. And that's exactly where the term Hosea comes into play. So we have these three terms, right? Nabi, Ro, and Hosea. And they all seem to be pointing to different facets, I guess, of the same fundamental role. Individuals who were chosen by God to receive and then communicate his message.
So maybe the real difference isn't so much in the labels then, but in the way these prophets received and then passed along God's message. So this kind of makes me wonder, were there other figures like this in other cultures at the time?
Well, our sources point to some pretty intriguing examples from ancient Mesopotamia, specifically from the city of Mari. We find these texts that mention individuals who claim to have received messages from the deities, usually in dreams or states of ecstasy. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, it does. Were they basically doing the same thing as the Israelite prophets then?
Well, let's take a closer look at one of these Mari letters. In one, there's this guy, Malak Dagon, and he claims to have gotten a message from the god Dagon intended for King Zimri-Lim. But instead of going straight to the king, he tells this other guy, an intermediary named Itordastu, and then he writes it all down and sends it up to the king.
That seems a lot less direct than the way the prophets in the Bible did things. They often just went straight to the source, right? Even confronting kings, like face to face.
Exactly. That direct communication, so typical of a Nabite. Well, that's one of the first things you notice when you compare Israelite prophecy to these other ancient Near Eastern examples. And it's not the only difference either.
Oh, what else sets them apart?
Well, take a look at these other two letters we have from Mari. Both messengers, they include this disclaimer, right? After delivering the divine message, they say something like, let my Lord do what pleases him.
Wow. Talk about a lack of conviction. It's like they're saying, okay, here's what the God said, but no pressure, King. You do you.
Yeah, it's really a far cry from that boldness and authority that we see with the biblical prophets. They didn't offer kings any opt-out clause. They delivered God's word, with a fire in their belly, demanding a response. This raises a pretty fascinating question, actually. If these disclaimer practices were so common back then, why did the Israelite prophets avoid them?
Maybe it was something different about the content of their message, something that demanded that level of directness and authority. But what was it about their message that set them apart? What were they saying that that demanded such boldness?
Well, if you look at those Mari letters, they were mostly focused on external rituals, like the right sacrifices, the proper ceremonies, keeping the gods happy through outward actions.
But that wasn't really the focus for the Israelite promise, was it? Their message seemed to run a lot deeper than that.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't about just going through the motions or trying to appease some, you know, distant deity. The biblical prophets were really concerned with justice, righteousness, and a real genuine transformation of the heart. They challenged the status quo, calling people to live in right relationship with God and each other.
Yeah. It's almost like they saw this connection between those two things. Like treating your neighbor justly was part of what it meant to be in a right relationship with God.
That's a really perceptive observation. And it kind of points to a key distinction between Israelite prophecy and those other ancient Near Eastern practices. It wasn't just about avoiding divine wrath or securing earthly blessings. It was about aligning your life with this higher moral and spiritual standard.
Okay. So we're seeing a sort of deeper, I guess, more ethical dimension to Israelite prophecy. But if we're saying that this focus on morality was so central, shouldn't it be reflected in the very origins of prophecy in ancient Israel?
You're right to connect those dots. And it's right here that we bump into some pretty fascinating scholarly debates, actually. For a long time, some scholars, they tried to explain Israelite prophecy as a simple adaptation of those practices we saw in Mori, almost like a cultural borrowing, you know?
So they were saying that that Israelite prophecy was just a slightly tweaked version of what was already happening in other cultures.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. But if you really look closely at the evidence, that theory, well, it starts to unravel a bit. The differences in directness, authority, and especially that focus on internal transformation rather than external rituals, well, it suggests that something far more, well, radical was at play.
It's almost like Israelite prophecy was this brand new phenomenon, something that emerged from a different wellspring altogether. It makes you wonder if it wasn't borrowed or adapted from somewhere else, where did it come from? What set it apart?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it brings us right back to the heart of what made Israelite prophecy so unique. It wasn't just a set of practices or techniques. It was rooted in the very character of the God that they proclaimed.
So the nature of the message, it kind of points us back to the nature of the God behind the message. That's intriguing.
It is, and it makes you rethink this whole idea of what it even meant to be a prophet in ancient Israel. These weren't just fortune tellers or soothsayers; they were individuals chosen by a God who cared very deeply about justice, righteousness, and the flourishing of his creation.
Yeah, it sounds like they were more like spokespeople for this moral revolution, calling for a radical shift in the way. And the way people lived and interacted with each other and with God. But if that's the case, if their message was so deeply intertwined with the moral character of God, then it has to have some implications for us today, right?
Absolutely. And that's where things get really interesting. Those prophetic voices, well, they might have echoed thousands of years ago, but their message, it still resonates with a power that can, well, that can shake us to our core.
So what would you say is the key takeaway for our listener, you know, the one who's been diving deep into all this with us? What's the so what of all this?
I think the most important thing to remember is that engaging with the prophets, it isn't just about studying ancient history. It's about encountering a God who cares deeply about justice, righteousness, and the flourishing of his creation. It's about being challenged to examine our own lives, our own motivations, and asking ourselves, you know, are we living in alignment with those same values?
That's a pretty powerful challenge, and it makes me want to dig deeper into the messages of those individual prophets to understand their context, their concerns, and what they might be seeing to us across all these centuries.
That's a great point, and it's something we can definitely explore in a future deep dive. But before we go there, let's circle back to something you mentioned earlier: the idea that the prophets were calling for a kind of moral revolution.
Yeah. What was it about their message that was so revolutionary? What were they saying that was so different from the prevailing norms of their time? What made their words so potent and enduring?
Well, let's start by looking at a specific example. The prophet Amos, he was particularly outspoken about social injustice, you know, condemning those who exploited the poor and vulnerable. He didn't hold back, even when confronting the religious elite, you know, accusing them of hypocrisy, empty rituals.
So it sounds like he was directly challenging those power structures of his day, calling out those who were abusing their position for personal gain.
Exactly. And that was a radical message for its time. It was a call to completely upend the status quo, to dismantle systems of oppression, to create a society where justice and righteousness flowed like a mighty river.
And it wasn't just about, you know, empty words, right? He was calling for concrete actions for people to actually change their behavior, to align their lives with God's standards of justice and compassion.
Absolutely. And that's what made the prophets so dangerous in the eyes of those in power. They weren't just preaching piety. They were demanding a transformation of society, a revolution that was rooted in the very heart of God.
I never thought of it that way. It's almost like they were saying, if you claim to worship God, then your actions have to reflect His character. You can't claim to love God while turning a blind eye to injustice and oppression.
That's a powerful way to put it, and it highlights the enduring relevance of the prophet's message. Their words, they continue to challenge us to examine our own lives, our own complicity in systems of injustice, and to ask ourselves whether we're truly living out the values we claim to uphold.
So what does this all mean for us today? What does it even look like to live out those prophetic values in our own time and place?
That's a great question, and one that deserves our careful consideration. It's not about trying to replicate the exact circumstances of ancient Israel. It's about discerning the underlying principles of justice, righteousness, and compassion, and then applying them to the challenges we face today.
So it's not about about following a set of rules or mimicking the prophets' actions, but about embodying their spirit, their passion for justice, their unwavering commitment to speaking truth to power.
Exactly, it's about letting their words ignite a fire in our own hearts, a fire that compels us to stand up for what's right, to speak out against injustice, to work tirelessly for a world where everyone can flourish.
This has been an incredible incredible journey, and I feel like we've only just scratched the surface. What else can we learn from these individual prophets? Did they all have the same focus? Were there different themes or emphasis in their messages?
You've hit on a crucial point. The prophets weren't this monolithic group, all delivering the same message in the same way. They each had their own unique personality, their own style, their own particular concerns.
So it wasn't like a chorus, all singing the same note. There was a diversity of voices, a symphony of perspectives, all contributing to this larger tapestry of prophetic witness.
That's a great analogy, and that's what makes studying those individual prophets so fascinating. We encounter this rich tapestry of voices, each offering their own unique insights into the character of God, the human condition, and the path to genuine flourishing.
I'm already eager to dive into those individual voices, but before we go there, let's take a moment to appreciate the incredible journey we've taken together so far. We started by unraveling those tricky Hebrew terms for prophet, and discovered that they're more nuanced than we might have initially assumed.
We then contrasted those biblical prophets with those so-called prophetic figures in other cultures, highlighting their unique directness, authority, and focus on moral and spiritual transformation rather than just external rituals.
And we explored that fascinating question of prophecy's origins in ancient Israel, pushing back on those theories that tried to explain it away as mere cultural borrowing.
We saw that the unique nature of Israelite prophecy, it points to something deeper, something rooted in the very character and purposes of the God they proclaimed.
And finally, we delved into the heart of the prophet's message, recognizing their call for a moral revolution, a radical shift in the way people lived and interacted with each other and with God.
We saw that their words, they continue to challenge us today to examine our own lives, our own complicity in systems of injustice, and to ask ourselves whether we're truly living out the values we claim to uphold.
This deep dive has been incredibly insightful. And I feel like my understanding of prophets in the Old Testament has been completely transformed.
It's been a pleasure exploring this this fascinating topic with you. And it's definitely not the end of the conversation. There's still so much more to discover in the rich and complex world of biblical prophecy.
We encourage you, our listener, to continue wrestling with these questions, to delve deeper into the specific messages of individual prophets, and to consider how their words might challenge and inspire you to live more faithfully in your own time and place.
Absolutely. The prophets, they offer us timeless wisdom, guidance, and a vision for a world where justice and righteousness prevail. Let their words be a lamp to your feet and a light to your path as you seek to live a life of purpose, meaning, and unwavering commitment to the good.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of prophets and seers in the Old Testament. So we've established that these prophets, they weren't just, you know, echoing each other. What kind of variety are we talking about? Was it like a matter of style, or were there like some prophets tackling totally different issues?
It was definitely both, actually. Like, take Hosea, for instance. His whole message, it centered on this concept of covenant, you know, that deep binding relationship between God and Israel. And he used this really powerful imagery, marriage and infidelity, to portray Israel straying from God and the consequences of their actions.
Yeah, that's powerful imagery, and it seems so different from Amos's focus on social justice.
Exactly. While both Amos and Hosea were concerned with righteousness, they approached it from different angles, I guess. Amos was he was like this fiery preacher of social justice, you know, calling out the exploitation of the poor, the vulnerable. But Hosea, he was more like a poet of the heart, exploring the depths of God's love and the pain of broken relationships.
So it was like they were each holding up a different facet of God's character, showing us a fully picture of who he is and what he desires for his people. But wouldn't that make studying the prophets pretty complex? I mean, how do we even begin to unravel all these different strands of their message and apply it to our own lives?
Well, that's where the real work, I guess, and the real reward lie. Engaging with the prophets, it isn't just a passive exercise, right? It's an invitation to wrestle with these ancient texts, to grapple with their challenging words, and to allow them to illuminate our own journeys.
Hmm. Sounds like it's less about finding easy answers, and more about asking the right questions. What questions would you say are most crucial as we dive into this world of the prophets?
I think the most important question is this: what is God trying to say to me through these prophetic voices? What are the challenges they're raising that that resonate most deeply with my own life experiences? What are the truths they're proclaiming that that I need to hear and embrace?
That's a really personal way to approach these ancient texts. It's not just about understanding them intellectually, but about letting them speak to our hearts, right? To our deepest longings and struggles.
Exactly. And as you engage with the prophets this way, you'll begin to notice certain certain themes emerging, certain threads that weave their diverse messages together into this this coherent tapestry.
So what are some of those overarching themes, the ones that tie the prophets together? What are the core messages that that kind of transcend their individual styles and concerns?
Well, one of the most prominent themes is this this unwavering call to justice, whether it's Amos thundering against the exploitation of the poor, or Micah proclaiming that God requires us to act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. The prophets, they consistently challenge us to create a world where fairness, equity, and compassion reign.
It's like they're holding up a mirror to society, right? Exposing the cracks, the fissures, the places where we've fallen short of God's ideal.
Precisely. And they don't shy away from calling out those in power, those who abuse their position for personal gain, or turn a blind eye to the suffering of others. The prophets, they remind us that true righteousness, it isn't just about personal piety. It's about creating a just and an equitable society for everyone.
Another theme that seems to run through the prophets is this this emphasis on genuine worship, you know, a worship that that goes beyond empty rituals and outward appearances.
Absolutely. The prophets were constantly challenging their contemporaries, right, to align their actions with their professed beliefs. They weren't impressed by elaborate ceremonies or empty sacrifices. They wanted to see a transformation of the heart, a genuine turning towards God that that manifested in acts of love, mercy, and justice.
Yeah, it's like they were saying, if you claim to love God, then your life it should reflect that love. It should be evident in the way you treat others, in your pursuit of justice, in your commitment to creating a world that that honors God's heart.
That's a beautiful way to summarize it, and it brings us right back to the core message of the prophets. God desires a relationship with us that is rooted in genuine love, faithfulness, and a commitment to reflecting His character in the world.
This has been an incredible journey of discovery, and I feel like I've gained a whole new appreciation for the richness and depth of the prophetic message.
It's been a pleasure exploring this this fascinating topic with you, and we encourage you, our listener, to continue this this journey of discovery on your own.
Delve deeper into the words of these amazing individuals. Let their voices challenge and inspire you, and discover for yourself the enduring power of the prophetic message for our lives today.